Tenet? Is that how this is? Tenet?
Tenant. Yes, Tenant.
Tenant?
Tenant.
What am I missing?
You're missing a lot because it's, you know, Christopher Nolan. We have to.
No, what am I? No, I don't mean what am I missing with the movie. What am I missing with the name? How did I miss that?
No, what do you mean? It's a
Tenet.
It's a palindrome.
Palindrome.
Yes.
So I was right. Tenet.
Tenant.
Hold on here. Let me look.
Tenet. 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 It's like Tenet.
Tenet. Yeah, Tenet.
Yeah.
Not Tenant. Tenet.
I always mispronounce things, so. okay, so for tenant.
Tenant.
No, I think you said it. Did you say it? Did you say the second N?
Tenant.
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 No, Tenet.
Tenet.
In a world where you only have trailers and posters to judge a movie, Jim and Ted strike out to answer the age-old question, will you see it?
Happy New Year, Ted, and let's welcome everybody to episode 100 of the Trailer Junkies podcast. Figure rather than putting out a bad show, we just figure we wait till the new year.
That's right.
Yeah. So you had a good New Year.
Yes, you.
Or a good holiday season, I should say.
Yeah, the whole holiday season was good and amazing. But let's crack some beers so we can talk about it over the beers.
Yeah, I agree. I'm trying to figure out how to get this thing even open here. I'm like,
you get a little foil top over there?
I think that's what it is. So I brewed today, and what I brewed is what I'm having, except I'm having like the actual. And the reason. My good.
This is what you cloned. This is what you cloned, right? It's like a clone?
Yes, exactly. You know what? I need to get a knife or something. Hey, hang tight.
Okay.
Yeah, so I think, and you know, forgive me if I don't remember exactly every beer that we've had, but I think the first, when we started doing like these little beer things, I think the first one we've ever done was Old Rasputin. And what this is, it's a North Coast barrel-aged Old Rasputin Russian Imperial Stout.
Uh-huh.
It's aged in rye whiskey barrels, and they have Roman numerals 21.
Mm.
So I wonder if, like, every year they do one or something, and this is the 21st. Nice. 11.2% ABV.
Sweet.
And it's one of those one pint. Nine fluid ounces. So let me crack this sucker here. Yeah, this is a little expensive, but I figured why not for our 100th episode.
Splurge for the 100th.
All right, let's see how that is. I'm going to give some. Oh my God, it smells like freaking incredible. I'm going to give some to Clarissa here.
Awesome.
Yeah, and I don't know if they got a picture of this bad boy, and let's see if it's bottle aged. And oh yeah, wow, that is awesome. Super dark bottle.
A lot of sediment on there. Is that the bottle aging?
Here, yeah. Cheers. Well, I'm going to let that head go down for a minute. So what do you have?
Okay, so over the past couple of weeks, Audrey got me for Christmas 12 days of beers.
12 days of beers.
12 days of beers. I've been drinking a lot of those, and I'm gonna have a couple beers tonight because, you know, that's the way it is.
So is it a 12-pack that you have one a day, like an advent calendar or something?
It is exactly that. It's a 12-pack, and it has little holes in the top that have numbers on them.
Okay.
And you punch the numbers out for each of the days.
Got it. So it's not the 12 days of beers or whatever, like, and they come in the mail or something.
No. This is it. You buy it. They bought
like a
it,
club or whatever. Those
right. They
are.
Bought it at a Cost Plus World Market.
Gotcha.
And then when we went up to Los Gatos, we forgot to bring the 12 pack with us. So they ended up getting me another 12 pack up in Los Gatos.
Oh, jeepers.
And everyone's like,
how ashamed.
How horrible is that? That you have
yeah, that's terrible.
Two 12 packs of mystery beers. So I've had a lot of nice beers
and
out of
each
it.
Each one's different, I'm assuming.
Each one of the beers is different. On the second day, I had a sour that was really, really good. It was like an Asian sour. And then tonight, I have two two beers. I have
two beers.
It's called Handshake Brews, a collaboration with Brunswick Beer Works and LA Trap. So it seems like this is a kind of beer is this? Well, it seems like a trap, right? So it's one of those Trappels or something, right?
Like a Trappist ale?
Yeah, it's a New World Double Bock.
Oh, it's a Bock.
It's a Bock.
Yeah, that's a German beer.
Yeah, so Trap Monks. Cool. So I'm going to crack this one.
So it's brewed in LA?
It says LA Trap, so I don't know whether that's Louisiana or LA.
Oh, I got you.
It's actually Canadian.
I don't know if it's LA or LA. Ah, it's Canadian.
Oh, it's La Trap Monks. So that's why.
Ah, gotcha.
Been in LA too long.
Yeah, so let's get this one rolling. Oh my God, this thing is amazing. Wow, you can really taste like the rye whiskey in it too.
Nice.
Mm. That is a long sipper for tonight. It's just so good. I just want to savor it. I don't want to rip through this thing too hard. Oh, it's so good. Yeah. Awesome. So what do you think of yours there? A Bock.
A Bock. It's got a lot of caramel notes to it. So I
would think so.
I appreciate
those tend
that.
To be not very hoppy.
Not so hoppy. Which is a nice break, a nice respite. I have an IPA for later since this is only a 12-ouncer. This is 7.5 ABV.
Oh wow, it's that high.
For some reason it's 11.2 fluid ounces instead of a 12-ouncer, but hey, at least they're being honest, right?
Well, that's how the Europeans do it, because they don't do it on ounces, fluid ounces. They do it on centiliters.
Ah.
So 33 centiliters is like 11.2 fluid ounces.
There you go.
So it's, you know, it's that darn metric system that's jeeping you out of beer. Yeah. Like they can't go the full 35. You know what I mean? Nice round number.
Right. It's delicious. It's a delicious caramel finish, a bright full beer.
Wonderful. And the second beer, I guess you could tap into that later. Do you want to talk about it now? Tell me when you get into it.
Yeah, we'll do it later. All right.
So then, you know, let's catch up a little bit. So I haven't talked to you in a couple weeks. So you guys went to Los Gatos for just some holiday vacay?
We did our trip to Los Gatos that we typically do. My mother-in-law is here from the East Coast. So we went down first before Christmas. We went down to spend some time with family down there and in Escondido. So spent some...
And you don't have to worry about their names again, you know, like screwing that up. Like, you know, some of our highlights of the previous 99
episodes. Right.
Yeah.
So we did that before Christmas, and then we came home on for Christmas Eve. We went to Midnight Mass. So for Christmas Day, since we're only here for a day, you know, we came in on Christmas Eve from Escondido, and we're heading to Los Gatos on Christmas Day. We don't want to have to do any dishes or anything like that. We already had to pack. So we went to Sam Wu's because...
On Christmas Day, you went to Chinese food? Man, very Jewish of you.
And we had Jewish friends that we used to be a tradition that we would do, like, you know, order in. So on Christmas Day, we went out for Chinese food, and then we came home and packed, and we headed up to Los Gatos. And luckily, we went up on Christmas Day because they had a huge snowstorm on Boxing Day, on the day after Christmas, which is another possibility that we were planning on doing. And we would have been stuck in that traffic on the way up.
Oh, I heard it was miserable.
It took, you know, it's a 5.5 hour drive typically. And we just had dessert with Frank and Barbara. And they said they had some friends that went up to San Francisco, and it took them like 13 hours or something ridiculous like that.
Well, it was from El Segundo.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, which is near like LAX more or less. To Santa Barbara took him 8 hours. Typically, it might be a 2.5 hour drive. Yeah, I mean like... horrific traffic.
Yeah, so they closed the 5 down completely.
Yeah, I guess there was snow through the grapevine or something.
Yeah, it was, and it was so funny because coming back, we came back day before New Year's or something like that, and when we're coming back, we saw these huge snowbanks, and we're like, "What is this?" Like we missed it completely.
That's hilarious. Nice. Well, good job.
Yes.
Good
perfect
planning,
timing.
Even
perfect
though you didn't
timing.
Know you were planning. And then you said something about you got yourself a marathon coach?
Well, I did. I joined a different gym, and part of the new gym was a free analysis of my stride and different body analysis of my posture. So he was talking about, you know, fixing your posture. And fixing your posture is not all about like thinking about sitting up straight and stuff like that. It's actually like relaxing and developing the muscles in such a way that it will naturally pull you back into a proper posture. So,
sure,
you know, so he has all these tips and techniques, but I don't know. I've yet to figure out if I'm going to fork over the the big bucks that it takes for this level of a personal trainer. He has a master's, and he's doing his doctorate in, what is it, kinesiology or something like that.
Kinesiology, yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, that takes top dollar. So they're trying to sell me on it, but I don't think I can afford it.
You know what you need to do, though, is get like a running podcast or two.
Oh, there you go. That's what I'll do.
Yeah. And then like I listen to some for cycling, and they teach, you know, like you learn like training tips and like interval, like how it affects like your mitochondrial adaptation to like interval training and blah blah blah, right?
I'm not going to go crazy like you with your new diet that's for your bike burning fuel thing so you don't hit the wall.
I don't know about any new diet.
But it was fun because on, I guess, the day after Christmas, we went shopping, and Rose, my mother-in-law, she, you know, talked about, she used to buy me shoes a lot back, you know, 5-6 years ago. And she's like, hey, you haven't let me buy you shoes in a long time. So we were at the running store, and we're getting Bryce a new pair of sneakers. And I was like, all right, I'll try it on some sneakers. And I got some new Brooks. And yesterday we had a bowling function at work, and even though I wasn't back at work, I was like, oh, I'll come for the party, you know. If you guys are having a free lunch and a party, I'll come but bowl with you guys. So they came from work and I came from home, and one of my coworkers saw my Brooks when I took them off to put on the bowling shoes. She goes, oh, are those good for running? And I'm like, oh yeah, I've, you know, been running on the treadmill for about a week with them, over a week, but they're great, they're a good shoe. And she's like, oh well, we're doing a half marathon, you should come and join us for the half marathon. So I'm getting enlisted to
there's a good start.
A lot of different little things here. So we'll see what I pan out with.
Man, I like it. I made the suggestion, and you're taking it and running with it.
Yes.
There you go. Nice, nice. You know, the key to recovery when you're doing all this training is early bedtimes. I know that's hard for you. But early bedtimes, proper recovery, it's necessary.
Especially with a gift I bought myself. I bought myself a new 49-inch TV for the bedroom.
49-inch. Why not a 50?
Because a 49-inch was only $279. So
yeah, because they mismeasured in manufacturing. So they said, we got to sell this cheaper. We're an inch off. So the heads will all be cut off by an inch.
Do you have a TV in your bedroom?
No, we just have the one in the living room.
Just the one in the living room. Okay.
Yeah, the bedroom is for two kinds of sleeping. You know, sleeping and biblically sleeping.
How was your vacay? How was your time off?
Oh yeah, it was great. I did the annual seafood pasta and fixings, clams and smelts and seafood. Well, this year it was like a baked penne seafood pasta thing. I do baked clams and fried smelts and, you know, all kinds of like the old Italian Catholic tradition that my mom grew up with my grandparents and stuff that I picked up when I was a kid, and I carry it on. And I barbecued a duck on Christmas Day, and Clarissa and her mom did like all the fixins and good side dishes, and everything was homemade from scratch. It was really good.
We heard tonight that you were under heavy fire while you guys were doing that.
Under heavy, oh yeah.
Nerf.
Yeah, we
Nerf
got
fire.
The boys the Nerf guns. Oh man, it's hilarious. They're out of control with those things. And New Year's Eve, we got to bed, I think, about 10:15. So our typical New Year's where we don't do much, you know.
But do you do East Coast? Do you do New York's Times Square drop, or you don't even watch that?
We don't even do that, really. I mean, you know, it was like a few years ago, maybe around the time when the boys came into the picture, we were like, let's go to bed. We're so tired, you know? Mm-hmm. And then you wake up like bright eyed the next day, you know, you feel good. You're not tired. You're not hungover. And I'm like, man, I drink every day throughout the year. I don't need some other day to drink. You know, I don't need that much.
You need the one day for recovery.
I need to recover on the first to start my trajectory for the coming year. Yeah, no, not quite. It was nice to not feel like just utter crap the next day like I used to, you know what I mean? So yeah, we watched, we've been watching a bunch of stuff we can get to later. So we watched some of that New Year's Eve. Mm-hmm. I signed up, well, I put in for the lottery again for the second attempt at Leadville.
Okay.
Yeah, so I last year, to recap.
Wait.
What?
Second attempt?
Yeah, the second, well, I'd say, I finished last year, but it's still.
You finished? It's not like you were, you know, fell out and you had a broken bicycle or something, you know?
No. But it's still, every year is an attempt because it's like, who knows what could happen over the course of 100 miles and everything. That's what I meant by that.
Yeah.
I finished at 10 hours, 22 minutes at the Leadville 100. Mm-hmm. I put into the lottery again because my goal is to get under 9 hours and get the big belt buckle.
Okay.
I learned a ton about the race, a ton about training, and a ton about all kinds of stuff. So I think I'm going to take all this newfound knowledge and go forth and try and improve my chances of getting under 9 hours and, you know, my fitness and all that stuff. So I find out January 20th whether or not I get in. I think chances are good because I did finish the first year.
Don't they consider that?
I think so, yeah, because they ask you, did you finish? Did you do any other Leadville series races? And I did the Tahoe race. And what were your times in these races? Mm-hmm. And so I think they consider, like, I think it's a lottery that's
weighted.
Yeah, it's not random. Maybe in the beginning it might have been random, but I think now it's like, okay, you know, what do they want more than anything? They want to have a high finish rate, right?
Yeah.
So they want to get people that they know can finish. So I think chances are good I'll be in for a second year in a row.
And if you don't get into the lottery, then there's qualifiers that you have that you did anyway, right? Like the Tahoe one.
Yeah. So what you could do is you go to for example, the Tahoe race, there's others. But depending on how you finish in your age group and everything, then you can get a token and then you can elect to either do it or not do it if you take the token. If you take the token, though, you have to register, but you can postpone it for a year.
Okay.
In other words, the Tahoe race is in July, like I think it's July 15th or something this year. Mm-hmm. And Leadville's only 1 month away. So
less than a month sometimes because it's July 10th.
Yeah.
I mean, August 10th.
Yeah, it's August 15th this coming year.
Okay, good.
But with that, you might not be fully prepared for a Leadville. So you could put it off for to the next year. But what you have to do is register and pay for it. So
right.
You can't just take the token and be like, cool, I got me a cool token. You know, they want you to pay for it, you know. But so doing that and then just been off work a couple weeks with a ton of projects around the house and doing a bunch of things and doing some riding just to keep my legs moving a little bit. Nothing too serious. But yeah, that's where we are pretty much. And then we got Clarissa an electric cargo bike for Christmas.
Oh, wow.
And we sold one of our cargo bikes. We sold my old cargo bike, and then we have hers up for sale on Craigslist. You know, kind of moving out bikes, moving in bikes, I guess. But, you know, she's proved over the past 4 years that she's worthy. So I figured we could get her an electric one for all the hills. I mean, you know, I told her, I said, you start getting out of shape. That's it. We got to get rid of this. Go back to a regular pedal bike without e-assist.
Ouch.
But yeah, we got a Rad Wagon. It's really cool. It's white with like orange lettering and so on. And mm-hmm. The boys can ride in the back. I rode it yesterday to Home Depot with them and everything. And bike's really fun to ride. And the boys really enjoy it and everything. And yeah, so she's riding that thing.
Is it a different style?
Yeah. So what it is, like the Shark bike is an Urban Arrow, and that's kind of what they call a Bach feats, where it's almost like a bicycle wheelbarrow in a sense, right? There's a big bucket in the front that the kids ride in, or cargo too, you know? And then this is a long tail cargo bike that they sit on the back with. So the bike is like extra long like, let's say a regular bike is, I don't know, what's a regular bike? 4 feet long, maybe 3 feet. Mm-hmm. More than 3 feet, like 4 feet long. Like this bike might be like 6 feet long, you know, so, or whatever, 5.5 feet long. So it's a little bit longer. So you could fit, you know, kids and you could probably fit like, you know, 6 bags of groceries in the side bags and everything and stuff. So, you know, definitely cool. She really enjoys riding it. And, you know, I mean, heck, she rides every day. So get her something that she's going to enjoy, you know?
I am looking at it. It looks fancy. It's white and it's beautiful and it's got a lot of roll cage on it.
Yeah. Yeah. So the boys, that little cage thing is kind of like what they hold on to and stuff when they're on the back, you know?
Yeah. That's awesome. Cool.
A lot of fun. All right, man. So what do you say we get into some 1984 flashbacks?
Okay, cool.
Yeah, with Wonder Woman, 1984.
So were you a fan?
I got two words.
Oh, two words. Hit me with your two words. Jim's two words for...
White dress.
White dress. White
so
dress.
So I'm watching it with Clarissa, uh-huh. And that white dress scene comes up, and she just goes, wow. Yeah, definitely a sexy woman right there, man, Wonder Woman. That is a sexy Israeli.
Well, you know, the military keeps you fit, right? So
I guess. So was I a fan of the first one?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. No, the first one was cool. You know, I don't know necessarily that of all of the various characters, Marvel, DC, etc., that I'm a huge Wonder Woman fan. Mm-hmm. I watched the Linda Carter ones when I was a kid, but I'll watch this one too. I mean, the first one was cool. I enjoyed it. The one thing I got to say that I am a little concerned with is, do you think that for like kind of a loose plot line or loose storyline, they're making up for with sexy?
I don't think so. I think this falls into the trailer artifact that you talk about, where the subject matter and the engine behind this behemoth machine that is, you know, the IP, the intellectual property of Wonder Woman. Anybody that's interested in this is going to see it.
So it's like you always say.
Yeah.
You're appealing to the fans with the eye candy of all the action and everything that goes on. And the plot line right now is going to be loose because you don't need to appeal to the fans with a solid plot line at this point.
Right.
That might be for trailer number two, for example.
Exactly. The story cell doesn't need to be there. This is the sizzle. You know, it's gonna showcase the top line stuff, and you're just
okay. I'll give you that.
And you're just kind of selling into exciting the built-in audience.
Right. Yeah.
And I think, you know, it has the cachet of Patty Jenkins as the director and, you know, partial writer of this, that she's going to, you're going to have trust in Patty Jenkins and you're going to expect a good story from her.
Yeah. And then I like the music score in the trailer. I mean, nice play with New Order the whole way through. And then when he's hitting the 50 cal and the, you know, the drum beat hits hard and stuff. I mean, that was awesome, you know?
Right.
I really enjoyed that.
And do you like the idea that Mandalorian's in this?
The Mandalorian.
Have you finished The Mandalorian?
Yes, we have. Okay. So you mean the guy when he takes off the helmet?
Yeah. So you've seen Pedro Pascal now.
Okay. Yeah.
In The Mandalorian. So now we know that he's also in this. So it's kind of interesting to see him crossing, you know, company genre lines and, you know, doing all of that, you know, doing this all without a mask.
Yeah. And it's so funny, though, like, when they take off the mask, you know, and then you see who was the Mandalorian, just to digress for a second.
Yes.
I wasn't expecting Pedro Pascal. I don't know who I was expecting, but I was expecting like more of like, I don't know, like a chiseled jaw, buzz cut sort of a look, you know, or I don't know.
And I think Pedro Pascal does have like a chiseled jaw, buzz cut. I think, he doesn't have a buzz cut, obviously, in that. But I think the thing that was interesting about that reveal is that he is so vulnerable. Like,
maybe that's what it was.
You know, it's like when IG-11 takes off his helmet to help him, it's like the vulnerability of that character. In any other there some weaker directors or weaker story people would have been pushed in a way to say, like, all right, we're going to take off the helmet and he's going to have this beautiful coiffed hair and he's not going to be sweaty. He's going to be beautiful.
Right.
This is the one chance we get to see his face. But no, with Jon Favreau, he's like, no, he's hurt. He's injured. He's on the verge. He's on the verge of dying unless IG-11 could take off his helmet. And were he any shorter than, you know, a breath away from death, would he let anyone, whether he's a robot or not, take off his helmet? So he, you know, he rationalizes himself with IG-11 to say, okay, take off my helmet. You're not a human. It doesn't matter. You know, so it was a beautiful, vulnerable look that he's given. And you're like, it's unexpected. You expect it to come off and to be like,
yeah, maybe that's it. Exactly. It was unexpected.
You expect him to like blow his hair back and have this beautiful looking
like Fabio
man.
Or something.
Yeah. Because he's a good looking guy, right? So,
yeah. Okay, so a desert island question.
Yes.
All right. So if you're in a desert island, you know, the way it goes, but with electricity and a kick-ass system.
Okay, cool.
Okay, so you get that at least.
And my new 49-inch TV, or is this an audio question?
No, like whatever a kick-ass system means to you. Like,
okay, cool.
Like screen-wise, you want projector, do you want like 100-inch, you know, yeah, whatever that means to you.
Okay.
You know, surround, like Dolby Atmos, you know.
Yeah.
Like, go all the way.
Right.
For some reason, this desert island happens to have all that.
Okay.
Would you rather have Marvel or DC?
Ooh, Marvel or DC. You can only have one, Marvel or DC. I think Marvel just kills more time. There's more Marvel stuff.
There's more Marvel stuff. So, okay, maybe. Okay, so there's like the X-Men that has like a ton of stuff. And
yeah,
then there's like Avengers that has a ton of stuff. But let's go maybe like the DC universe and like the Avengers universe.
Yeah, I don't know. I watch Aquaman, I watch Superman, I watch Batman, but I don't, other than the Chris Nolan Batmans, I don't really have anything that I love as much as I love the Kevin Feige Avengers. And really it's down to that. It's like watching all this television, the showrunner is really like is more important than the director of each episode, you know? But in a franchise as big as the Marvel Cinematic Universe and the DC Extended Universe, that executive producer that has the through line through the whole phase of 10 or 20 movies is so much more important than even the individual directors. So I think, you know, Chris Nolan was both the director and the showrunner for his three, and they kind of tried to tap him to be the producer for the DC Extended Universe, but he really didn't want to do it, I think. You know, it wasn't like in his goals of what he wanted to do with his career and what his life. So he kind of strayed away from that, and he didn't take that mantle. But yeah, so I think for me, the Avengers is just a better constructed through line story that I just have I'm more interested in seeing. Like, Patty Jenkins is a phenomenal director. Like, I love watching her stuff. So it's going to be a great movie, but as far as stringing it together with the other films, it's going to have Easter eggs. It's going to have little cameos of other parts of the DC Extended Universe, but it's not going to have that nuts and bolts, huge plot points that are going to be carried throughout, you know, the next 10 movies.
Yeah, I would agree wholeheartedly. I mean, I think one of the good things, or one of the cool things about the Marvel movies and the Marvel universe, is that the Marvel characters, they cross boundaries. You get Guardians of the Galaxy intermingling with, you know, the Hulk, and intermingling with, you know, just all of the other characters,
yeah,
throughout the various movies, and especially coming to a head at, you know, Endgame and everything. I really enjoyed watching them interact with each other and even making reference to each other in various movies. And then the movies all tying together with like the through line of Thanos and his whole thing with the stones and everything.
Right.
Other than like the, what was the cartoon where they were all in the Hall of Justice or whatever?
Oh yeah. Yeah. The Justice League or something.
The Justice League. Yeah. Other than that, like they never, you don't ever see them like crossing into the each other's universes, or maybe not universes in the way to put it, but into each other's story arcs, right, and storylines and movies. I mean, they might, like you said, have an Easter egg or something, but if you're not looking for it, or if you're not paying attention close enough, you're like, they're all like their own islands and one-offs.
And it doesn't, and if you missed it, it's not consequential to you understanding the story. You know what I mean? The overall overarching story. So, you know, I think over the holiday break, Bryce was watching Ant-Man and I was like, oh, let's put Ant-Man on the big screen. Cause you know, I haven't seen Ant-Man in a while. So he's watching on his phone. And I was like, oh, let's just switch over to watching it on the television. And we did. And I was like, oh, it's a great standalone movie. And it's got like three or four plot points that play heavily into Endgame. You know what I mean? The multiverse and everything about it. So it's kind of, it's just well thought out, well structured, you know, it's like they have a show Bible for the whole universe. And I think that's what excites me the most about the future of the Star Wars franchise, because I think I've heard rumblings that Kevin Feige is going to be the one taking over the executive producing role in that
like one universe. Massive whiteboard.
Right.
You know.
So, and I think they have an interesting challenge as they wrap up the Skywalker storyline. Did you see the Rise of Skywalker over the break?
We did. And okay, we can cool. get to that in
All
a little
right,
bit.
Cool. We'll do that at the yeah. end. Sorry.
So I think we both settle on Marvel. With that said, I will definitely see this Wonder Woman movie. If anything, for that white dress.
More white dress.
More white dress. Yeah. It's like more cowbells.
Exactly.
Yeah, I mean, overall, you know, like, I'm still a fan of DC. I think if I'm going to just watch, like, a one-off where you're not looking at, like, 20 movies to go all the way through, yeah, DCs are great. And then I think the other side of it is that you can watch a Batman without needing to have watched all the other Batman.
Exactly, right.
You know, and the ones that follow that Batman may not even point back to the one you just saw anyway.
Exactly.
Cool. So how about we get into medical police?
I had to throw this one in there. So
does this go back to what we've said though, with regard to Netflix and their formulaic approach to movies and TV shows and series and everything? I mean, this is so formulaic in my opinion.
Well, I think it's formulaic. And like we said, it's formulaic for on purpose. It's by the people.
Oh, it's so tongue in cheek.
It's by the people who brought you Children's Hospital on Adult Swim. And I think the thought has to be at Netflix, we could either license shows and be at the beck and call and recall from the people that own the content, or we could just produce something by the producers of the shows that we want to license. So it's like, we want some Adult Swim content. What do? We'll get Adult Swim producers and have, what's your next idea that you haven't sold to Adult Swim? You could produce it for us. We'll pay you double whatever it is that they're going to pay you. And then you can make it over here and we'll kind of leave our hands off of your creative process. But then, you know, when you give that kind of free rein, you end up with things like The Irishman, which you loved, but I think it's gotten very mixed reviews. But it is the Scorsese piece that Netflix will never have to license because they paid for it up front. You know what I mean? So,
right. Yeah.
So they have all these different assets in their quiver that they're just stocking and they're just stockpiling, and they just need to catch up to the rest of, you know, every streaming service that's coming gunning for them, you know, across the board. Disney Plus is only one of many streaming services to come. You know, Comcast is coming and Warner Brothers is coming and everything is coming. There's so many more streaming services yet to come that
it's a race to the bottom.
You're the second person this week that is at the race to the bottom.
Oh, for real?
Yes, yes.
Nice.
So it is, it's a race to the bottom, but they're paying top dollar. So I expect a lot from this. I will watch this immediately when it comes out in a couple days. It'll be out by the time this airs, I think. So we'll be ready for it. But
January 10th.
But it looks hilarious. And I'm a huge Law and Order fan, but with SVU, I'm just out of it. I can't watch that much of that kind of procedural cop show anymore. You know, it's just too,
yeah,
it's too depressing, you know? So this seems like it's a procedural that kind of has the tongue in cheek, and it's just it looks hilarious. So
with the trailer, did you notice how, like, the beginning starts off looking like a trailer to the trailer, but then it just keeps rolling on and you're like, whoa, they totally threw me for a loop there. I was expecting a trailer to the trailer.
Yeah, no, it is a trailer that plays on trailer tropes. So I appreciated that.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, this is kind of an aside, but do you think, and maybe they do, that the CDC like has their own law enforcement branch?
I don't think they do. I think it's all fake.
So you think that might be fake? No, and the funny thing is, when they brought that up, I was thinking to myself, huh, I wonder if they do. It would make sense. Like, they're hunting down, like, bioterrorism and so on. And, you know, they have their own. I mean, the post office has their own law enforcement branch. You know, I mean, they hunt down, like, investigate postal fraud and everything. And why wouldn't you have people, like, I don't know, like those moms who have, like, the chicken pox lollipops?
Everybody, that, you know, that is a big myth that the post office has their own law enforcement, because I have my myth.
No, they do. My friend Ben is, he works for the Postmaster General.
Oh, well, then I need to talk to him, because my mail gets stolen on the regular.
Oh, yeah. No, they have people that investigate that.
Well, I've tried to get in touch with them, and they are not very easy to get in touch with. So after the show, let me get his number, because I have a bone to pick. Because every time my mail's stolen, you know, we're expecting a check or something, and then the mail gets stolen out of my locked mailbox. They put something sticky down the top and they fish it out. And then I say, oh, there's no mail, and I'm expecting a check. And I go a couple blocks over, and a couple blocks over in the bushes, I found not my mail, but other people's mail. So
yeah,
there's a big rash of mail theft in my area. So I will get Ben's number from you after the show.
Yeah, no, he does that, though. He's a sworn officer that the post office has, for sure.
I will say my favorite part of the whole trailer was when they jump off of the roof or jump off of the building.
Oh, yeah.
They're so hurt at the end of it.
I could say with certainty that scene and not waking the sleeping guy when they're dragging him in the in the chaise lounge. I can say with certainty I definitely don't laugh during most trailers. And I for certain laughed a few times during this trailer. I mean, the trailer was worth it enough.
That's awesome.
It was that good.
Yeah.
I mean, it's so bad. But, like, you laugh during a trailer. I mean, that's how you know they're hitting it.
Yes.
And I'll definitely. I mean, it's like the bar is so low. Why would you not watch it? One thing I got to say, though, is I will not watch this while doing interval work on the indoor trainer. Because I'll be breathing so hard I won't be able to laugh. And then I'll start laughing. I won't be able to work out. Like,
that's like altitude training, though, right?
Oh, yeah, there you go. I'll do it right before Leadville. Yeah, how'd you train? I put on medical police.
And I laughed so hard, it was hard to breathe.
I just couldn't breathe. So, you know, it was like oxygen deprivation. Yeah, I mean, overall, yeah. I mean, the bar is low. It's on Netflix. We subscribe. Of course.
And you know, the funny thing about, I got the new TV in the bedroom, and we had, because we hadn't had a TV in the bedroom for like 15 years.
Man, I'm surprised Anne allows it.
Well, I pulled all the cables into the ground and I sealed off the holes where the cables came up, right? So Anne's like, ha ha ha, you got to put a TV in our bedroom? Fine. So I plugged the TV into the bedroom, you know, plugged it into the socket in the wall.
It's all Wi-Fi.
And it's all Wi-Fi. Hooked it up to the Wi-Fi, turned on all the streaming services. She's like, oh my God, this is just, we just plug it in. I was like, plug and play, baby. maybe. And then, you know, when you turn the power on, it tries to turn onto a channel and it, you know, just shows static. So it's like,
oh yeah.
So what do? There's a Netflix button and there's a Prime button. You don't have to turn the thing on. You just hit the Netflix button and it opens Netflix from a cold start.
Oh my God. Right there.
So I have a Netflix, I have a one button access to Netflix. I don't have to turn the TV on. It is the on button and Netflix all at the same time.
Do you know how lazy we are becoming as a society? They have an Alexa, and how do you say it? Like an Alexa enabled.
Yeah.
A microwave oven. I mean, can you believe like really like you can't get up to push like one to get like 1 minute or so. You got to like tell the thing to bake a potato. I mean, how does that even work? You still have to go put the potato in the thing. You're already in front of it. Are you that lazy you can't raise your shoulder to just push the button three times? Wow. But yeah, I mean, there is some craziness out there.
Well, I think the kids were disappointed that my TV was not you-know-who enabled, because when we just said that word, my machine went off in the background here. So,
uh-oh, we're going to do that to everybody.
So the kids were talking to the television, and I'm like, no, it's not enabled. Just use the remote. They're like, why? Why do I have to use the remote?
Oh, my God. We're creating a whole generation of people that like, they won't leave the sofa.
Oh boy. I picked up the home phone last week and I turn, you know how you on a home phone, you pick it up and you turn on the dial tone, you open up the line and you turn on the dial tone.
Sure.
And then you dial a number after that.
Yeah.
Audrey was watching me dial the number. And as I did that, when I was waiting for Frank and Barbara to answer the phone, because I was calling them, she said, oh, I think it's so cute the way you wait for the tone and then you dial the number. And I was like, Audrey, it's called the dial tone. So that's what you did in the back of the day. So all the kids today, they just dial the number first, then they hit send, you know, and
then they hit send. Right. Right. Yeah. It's like the order is all wrong.
Right. Right.
So speaking of the order being all wrong.
Uh-oh. Good segue.
Tenet. Is that how this is? Tenet?
Tenant. Yes. Tenant.
Tenant?
Tenant.
What am I missing?
You're missing a lot because it's, you know, Christopher Nolan.
I don't mean what am I missing with the movie? What am I missing with the name? How did I miss that?
No, what do you mean? It's a Tenet. It's a palindrome.
Palindrome.
Yes.
So I was right. Tenet.
Tenant.
Hold on here. Let me look.
Tenet. 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 It's like Tenet.
Tenet. Yeah. Tenet.
Yeah.
Not Tenant. Tenet.
I always mispronounce things, so.
Okay, gosh. So what I'm saying, though, is what am I missing? Like, what's with the name? I'm missing something with the name.
I don't know what the name. It's probably like a code name for something.
Right. Okay. Yeah, I mean, a palindrome for sure. I mean, it's like the same, but backwards and forwards.
Palindrome, it looks like the perfect Christopher Nolan movie. You know, what did you, are you a Christopher Nolan fan?
Oh yeah, for sure.
Yeah. So this is right up his alley. It's like what he wants to do. You know, it's an amazing piece of his craft, you know?
So am I understand this is kind of it's obviously a time warp movie, but so he's like a special agent, like Delta Force operator kind of a guy, like Ghost Recon something or other, but it's like to find crimes like in some odd way of measuring time or something. I mean, I'm totally lost with what's going on here.
I think, you know, because Jean-Claude Van Damme took the name Time Cop. That they couldn't call this Time Cop, but that's basically what this is. It's a, you know, it's a new form of law enforcement that has some time travel capabilities and they use it to their advantage. But
time travel capabilities.
Yeah.
Because I was thinking like, okay, so Time Cop and everything.
Time Cop, Minority Report, that kind of stuff.
Minority Report. Yeah. I was thinking all along the lines of like Inception, but it's not Inception.
No, I think Inception plays into it too. I think there is.
Oh, you do that.
Yeah, I think, you know, conceptually Inception's involved there because, you know, Chris Nolan knows what he likes doing, like we said, and he didn't lock himself into the DCEU, and this is what he can provide to the rest of the world, you know, in his imagination that is this warped, you know, he has a warped sense of reality, and this is the benefit that we all get from it.
Perfect. I mean, could you imagine though, like you're on the ground and like you just get flung up the side of a building?
It'd be amazing.
That would be like, oh my God, I don't know what I would do. I want to go do it on an empty stomach is all I know. I think on its face, mm-hmm. it looks very confusing.
Yes, intentionally so.
It looks like right? Intentionally so. It looks like it's probably has a very complicated plot line.
Yes.
And I could say with near certainty that these kinds of movies, I'm lost and I'm always asking Clarissa, like, what's going on? Who's that guy? How did we get here? What did he say? Oh, who's this guy?
Who's this guy
again? Why? What happened there?
Wait, I thought this guy was dead. Why is he here again?
Exactly. Like these movies, something will happen and I'll just go down one rabbit hole of the story and I lose track of some other plot point that comes back an hour and a half later and I'm just like lost. I could totally see this happening in Tenet.
And you're like, where's Adam Driver? Because I thought this was BlacKkKlansman, you know?
BlacKkKlansman.
Where's Denzel Washington? This is his son, right? So we gotta...
totally, I know. I mean, it looks incredible.
Yeah.
I just don't know if I'll be able to keep up.
Well, I think for me, the great thing about Christopher Nolan films is the ability for multiple viewings. Be like, you know,
Yeah, right. I see what you mean.
I think the intent is to lose your audience, but trust them to stick with you, even if they're a little bit lost, and we'll wrap some stuff up, and they might have missed something in the mix, but...
Come back later, watch it again, and
come
then
back later,
answer some of the other
you know,
questions.
The Easter eggs will be there, and you'll be able to say, like, oh, now remember that scene at the end. This is why that part of that thing happened, you know?
Yeah, for sure, for sure. All right, so let's move on to A Quieter Place.
Quieter Place. I like that title better.
Yeah. But yeah, Quiet Place part two.
But it's interesting to me, like when you talk about trailers though, the part of the reason that I had to throw this one on, of course, Audrey scooped me and was like, oh, did you see the new Quiet Place 2 trailer? And I'm like, no, I haven't seen it, Audrey. I've been like working on getting us home and getting everything situated, you know?
For sure.
And she's
yeah.
like, oh, it's great. It's great. And I was like, okay, I'll watch it. And I watched it and it's so odd because the first part of it, it has a bit of a trailer to the trailer, but that first whole segment, it feels like it's a master shot and it says day one, right? So because it's saying...
Well, it's very prequel-ish.
It's a prequel, but then all of the story plot points afterwards are post, you know, the first movie. So it has like this huge long scene that plays out in this master shot of them driving where this is the first day of the alien or monster invasion. And then we jump to after all the events of the first movie take place and we're with a new group of people and this and our family trying to, you know, keep moving and keep, you know, surviving past the Krasinski death. Sorry, spoiler alert. If you haven't seen the first one, I don't know.
Oh man, that ship sailed. Yeah, people. I mean, I know I wait a while to see movies, but man, it's like if you haven't seen it by now, too bad. But yeah, I mean, I do like the prequel
scene. It's a whole scene, yeah.
Attempt the prequel scene.
Yeah.
And what it really reminded me of almost was like a Walking Dead or Fear the Walking Dead kind of a thing where they kind of went back and relived like the first days of the zombie apocalypse and everything.
Right.
And it's like reliving the first days of the alien invasion.
Yes.
I really dig that because it's like a lot of times in movies, you're there for whatever the reason you're there, but you have no idea how you even got there.
Yeah, you get thrown in the middle.
Exactly, right. Yeah. And, you know, my original, when I saw this come across, my original thought was, well, you called it, because I said, are they going to do a sequel or whatever? And you said, of course they're going to do a sequel.
Made millions of dollars.
Yeah, I mean, if, you know, they're playing off of, you know, their legacy there.
Yeah.
my opinion, I really thought it should have been a one and done.
Mm-hmm.
And when she racks that shotgun at the end, that left so much to the imagination that if you ended it there forever, then in your mind, you're like, yeah, they're just going to go and kick ass now.
Right.
Because they know how to do it. But I don't know. I think their approach with the prequel shots and then the after the Quiet Place movie shots with, you know, that new group or whatever, that where they have those booby traps and stuff.
Right.
And bottles. I think that they're going to play it out well. I mean, I was so worried that they were going to come back and then it was going to be like, all right, now here's how they're going to go and kick ass, you know? And it's like, really, that's going to be so boring.
Right. And I think to me, that's what that this trailer has, this interesting dichotomy of that one master shot in the car, which is reminiscent of Children of Men. I don't know if you know the Clive Owen movie. That has this beautiful master shot of a car getting attacked as it's driving through the woods. And it's this one shot that's done without any cuts. And it's the car is being attacked from all sides. And the camera is flying in the middle of the car and spinning around in the car as the car is being attacked. And they showed the video of how they made this one shot and the rigs that they...
And what movie is this?
It's Children of Men.
Children of Men. Okay.
Children of Men, Clive Owen movie. And it's just a beautiful piece of filmmaking. And it has that kind of feel to it. And then on top of that, it has like a Bird Box feel. I don't know if you remember the flashback scenes in Bird Box. There's a lot of driving around town as the chaos ensues and the chaos is kicking off. Very, very, like you said, that Fear of the Walking Dead does the same thing where nobody knows what's going on yet and they're trying to figure it out.
Yeah, like why is my neighbor eating my other neighbor? Right. That's so bizarre. Why is that happening? I'm trying to figure this out.
Why is my junkie girlfriend looking a little more junky than normal?
Exactly.
But yeah, so I think that first half of the trailer is kind of there to say, like, trust us, trust John Krasinski and his filmmaking, that he's not just cashing a check on this. Like, he has a story to tell that's going to expand on the world. Because, like, if you had just seen the second half of that trailer, then it's just an extension for the sake of, you know, making another movie in this this universe.
Yeah, in the world, right.
But if you have the flashbacks and if you do it well, then it can really expand on, you know, like now that we've seen the monsters, we've seen these alien monsters or whatever they are, we can explain more of the story and it is additive. So, like, that first sequence is the thing that sold me on seeing it.
Yeah, no, and I agree with you as far as the first sequence when the bus is coming at him, there's the big hole where the driver was. And then I love the jump cut where the arm of the alien comes out.
Yeah.
And then they jump cut away straight to like the new or the updated like kind of storyline.
Yeah, the post film one. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, that was really cool because it really, you have that heightened, like, is she going to outrun the bus? And where is this, like, where is she going? And then they just cut away right when you see the alien, which really leaves you with an uneasy feeling.
Yeah, yeah.
So fantastic, you know, and it makes you want to see, like, well, what happens in that scene? Because you know it's going to be way more intense as she's trying to, like, it's her getaway, essentially.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah.
As this alien's, like, coming at her, you know, and coming at everybody because everybody's running around like maniacs.
Right.
And then you got to figure, like, first thing I thought was, okay, people are running rampant everywhere. Did she get away because she was lucky? Or did she get away because, like, she just happened to keep her cool? Like, what was the reasons? Because these aliens were, like, going after everybody.
Yeah, and she's tough as nails. Like, she has the bandage still around her bare foot. So we know that she's not fully healed from stepping on that nail. You know what I mean? So,
oh, yeah.
So this is like immediately following that. And the second half reminds me of like the sixth or seventh season of Walking Dead, where it's like, oh, we're going to run into another crew of people and we have to figure out who's righteous in this new group or who's really like maniacal in the new group. So,
right. Yeah. Yeah.
That's, you know, and then they have that line where nobody that's left is worth anything or worth saving or whatever. So,
yeah,
you know, that might lose me a little bit, but I'm interested to see how they're going to weave it together because of the first half of the trailer.
All right. So we've done 99 of these and this is episode 100. So for old time's sake, Ted.
Yes, sir.
Of one of these four movies, give us a three-word review.
Oh, three-word review. Okay. All right. While I'm doing that, I'm going to crack my next beer.
Okay. And I'll tell you what. While you're cracking a beer, thinking of a three-word review. And like I said, just pick one of the four that we covered. We covered a lot tonight.
Right.
Pick one of the four three-word review for one of them. You don't have to do for all of it. Uh-huh. Just a little tease back to the good old days. And while you're doing that, I'll get into the rundown of what we were watching.
Okay, cool. Let me give the quick reveal of the second beer tonight.
Oh yeah, by all means, go for it.
So Frank and Barbara came over for our Christmas celebration with them this evening for a little dessert. And Frank and Barbara gave me a 64 ounce hand brewed Brumex? I don't know. And it's a
Brumo.
Brumo. That's what I'll say it. And it's a
Brumeux. Brumo. It's very Brumo. French.
Okay, it's French. It's 9% ABV, still not hitting your 11% or over there. But Frank got it over at Hand Brewed Beer, our local spot there. So let me crack it.
And I don't expect you to drink all 64 ounces before the show ends.
We'll cap it and we'll see.
Exactly. So I'm going to give you the rundown of what we've been watching. I'm not going to review everything, but we could talk about a few things here and there. So in no particular order, we finished Mandalorian.
Okay.
All right. Let me know the taste here. How is it?
Oh, it's a beautiful IPA.
Is it that good? Imperial IPA. That's got to be pretty heavy duty then.
Yeah, it's the 9%, right? And it is nice.
No, I mean in hop flavor and stuff. And, it's got to be pretty awesome.
It's very hoppy, but it's smooth. So after the Bock.
Yeah, well balanced.
After the Bock, it's a nice second beer. Like, I'm glad I didn't drink this first. You know, it would have destroyed that Bock. But it's a beautiful, it's a hazy. So sorry.
Oh, it is hazy.
but it is nice. And Frank was worried about the carbonation because he had it bottled before Christmas, but it held.
Oh, nice, nice. Yeah, and usually the way they do that, they just put it up to the top so it doesn't...
Not a lot of oxygen.
It doesn't lose any. Exactly. Yeah, so like I said, in no particular order, Mandalorian we finished. We have like 1-2 episodes left to finish of Jack Ryan.
Okay.
Star Wars.
How is Jack Ryan hitting you this year?
Oh, I like it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I like it. I mean, you know, it's got the German dude who's missing the eye now and, you know, so, I mean, it's definitely a different vibe of like, I think for a terrorist show like this, the first series, you know, like you got to go down the
Middle East
Islamic terrorism route, you know, because that's like how everybody gets bought in. And now that they're bought in, it's like, okay, now he can go after like the European terrorists.
But I love the idea that we're in Venezuela, or I think we're in Venezuela, right?
Yeah.
And it's not drug cartel. It's not, you know, it's not like third world. It's like future of mining, like that kind of stuff. So I thought it was very interesting to not play into stereotypical, you know, socioeconomic or geopolitical spaces, you know?
And what's really cool about it too is you're looking at, rather than just the standard, you know, like terrorism, there's a bomb in the subway.
Right.
There's a chemical attack in the trade towers or, you know, whatever it is, right? There's like all these terrorist scenarios. Like, instead of that, you're looking at like nation states and elections and, you know, how the CIA is involved with like things other than terrorism.
Right. Real world.
Real world stuff. Yeah. That like things that you don't even think about, really. You know, so I think that's really a cool story arc that they're doing there.
On New Year's Eve, I was talking to a friend who just started the series. And I said to him, I think Tom Clancy would be proud of this series because of where it's going, because Tom Clancy was into the geopolitical structures of the way the world is, you know what I mean? So I think this does
for sure,
his name.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, proud by keeping into the tradition.
Yeah. And then Star Wars, The Rise of Skywalker.
Okay.
So we saw that.
Let's pause a little bit here because I have a lot to say. What do you think?
Okay. What do I think of Star Wars, The Rise of Skywalker? I felt it was a little too forcey. I would rather have seen less force stuff going on, you know, but.
Okay.
Obviously, like, Mikey's a little bit young. Timmy's like, oh, I want to go see it and all this stuff. I said, well, how about we screen it first, you know, and then we'll let you know and stuff. And I'm so glad we did, because it was pretty dark, pretty sinister, and I think it would have scared the hell out of them. Plus, it was like, I don't know if it's just the movies or if it's where we went, whatever, but it was, like, super loud.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't think that's a movie issue. That's just like, it was just way too loud. Like, man, lower it a little bit.
And
you know,
Palpatine's always scary, regardless of what form.
Oh, yeah. And then when he has his like nasty fingers and all that, and his eyes. One thing I thought was cool was the Sith Temple with those hundred thousands of whatever Sith.
Yeah.
Like, that was a neat way to present the Sith that we've never seen before.
Right.
Overall, I thought it was cool how they did Leia, you know, or Carrie Fisher, and they took, like, prior
footage and
pieced it all together and such. And I was very surprised to see Harrison Ford. I thought he was completely done.
Great cameo.
Yeah, I thought he was completely done, and he was going to be like, you know, I'm never doing this again. You know, thank God it's over. And he still showed up in the last one, so that was really cool. I'm not really sure how they had the Death Star in that ocean scene, because that was the second Death Star that would have been on Endor. So how did it get to that planet? I have no idea.
Yeah, it's so funny how just building a bigger gun is like in every single movie. It's all about building a bigger gun, you know?
Yeah, I mean, you know, and you're just like, and even the, like, if you think about Return of the Jedi, it was like a more powerful Death Star they were building.
Every single time.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. I mean, I don't know, the Finn character, and what's the other pilot's name? See, I don't even know these characters, you know.
It's like Poe Dameron, Finn.
Yeah, Finn, Poe Dameron. Well, Rey's the main character.
Yeah.
But what I'm saying, though, it's like they're characters that, yes, they're in these movies and stuff, but for some reason, I don't feel as emotionally connected to them as I did in, like, say, the original trilogy, like with Obi-Wan or Han or Luke and stuff. Like, you felt connected. With these guys, it's like I don't have the buy-in.
Yeah.
Maybe because I'm older. I don't know.
I think you have this repeat viewing of the original trilogy that, you know, I don't know. How many times would you say you've seen the original trilogy? Dozen times?
Oh.
Two dozen times?
Well, I would say it falls off as we move into Jedi.
Yeah.
But I would say Star Wars, the original Star Wars, A New Hope, even before it was A New Hope.
Right.
I would say that one 50 times maybe.
Yeah. And then
maybe more.
And then Empire, you've seen like 25, 30 times, I'm sure.
30, 40. Yeah. And then Jedi, maybe like 20, 30.
That's a lot of times to see a movie. Those movies.
Yeah,
I mean,
for
that's
sure.
Going to ingrain something in your consciousness that will be very hard to shake. I will say that since we were talking about it as a family, and my mother-in-law is here for a little while, she said she's only seen one of them, and she only saw A New Hope. So my kids are like, oh, we got to watch all of them. So we've been watching from the beginning all the way from Menace from Phantom Menace all the way through to Last Jedi, we watched all the movies in order.
That's cool. We should do that.
Except for Solo, which we forgot to watch because it's still on Netflix and it's not on Disney Plus. Disney Plus did something cool where if you go on you go into the Star Wars button on Disney Plus, it puts the movies in chronological order of occurrence.
Not of filming?
Not of filming. It does it like episode one, episode two, episode three, Rogue One, episode four.
Oh, I see.
Episode five, episode six, and then seven and eight. But so if they had Solo and if they had Last Jedi, which are still in Netflix for some reason, if they had that, then they would have been in order and we wouldn't have skipped Solo. But we went back to see Solo before we saw Empire Strikes Back. So
gotcha. Yeah.
But it was an interesting thing, and I've grown to appreciate The Last Jedi more, I think. And I always say, you know, temper my taste in things because I like the Sammy Hagar version of Van Halen better than David Lee Roth. But I like Last Jedi. I think it's a good movie. It's a solid movie. It has a lot of meat to it, and it's, you know, it's almost 3 hours long, so there's a lot there. But the one thing about The Rise of Skywalker that I have a bone to pick with the fanboys out there is that people complain that it checked too many boxes, or it checked all the boxes, and it was an exercise in box checking. You know what I mean? Like, and I say to everybody that says that, everybody that said that, like, you're the ones checking the boxes, so obviously you're the ones keeping track. And if it didn't check the boxes, you'd be complaining about the boxes it didn't check. So I think, you know, there's a bit of sour grapes there that people want to find something to a bone of contention. They want to complain about something, and this is what they choose to complain about, because I think in the end it's a strong finale to a saga, you know, like the end scene. And of course, spoilers, you know, we're about an hour into this thing, so there's going to be spoilers. But when Rey stands on Tatooine and we see the sand-filled house of Owen, you know, Uncle Owen, and it's just full of sand, and she's asked who she is, and she looks to the sky and she sees Leia and Luke in the sky smiling down on her. She basically puts on the mantle of Skywalker, even though she's by birth and by blood a Palpatine, right? So she's in the Palpatine line, but she's, you know, she's the only one that has chosen to be a Skywalker. So every other person in this lineage from Darth Vader back when he's little
Anakin Skywalker,
Annie Skywalker, when he's a Skywalker, Luke's a Skywalker, you know, they're all Skywalkers by birth and by blood. So there's no trial. There's no achieving Skywalker status. You just are by birth. So Rey gets to choose it, and she gets to put the mantle of Skywalker on herself. So I like that idea of her staring off into the sunset, staring off into the horizon, and seeing the two sun sunset of Tatooine, and us ending that Skywalker saga on that scene, you know?
So by birth, by blood, and by midichlorian.
I was going to try to get out of this without saying midichlorian once, but damn you.
The thing about it at the end when she says that she's Skywalker is, okay, so she chooses to be Skywalker.
Yes.
Okay, that's what she tells this old lady who's asking who she is.
Mm-hmm.
Let's assume she takes on the new family name, the new identity, and all that. Now, how does it just end there? Because it could keep going if it wants to. It doesn't have to end there. What they might do is, like, Mark Hamill doesn't have to come back, or all the old R2-D2 and C-3PO's and Chewbacca and Yoda's and all these other characters don't have to be in there. But I could certainly see it going down, like, the Rey lineage, just keeping the name Skywalker at this point. Just to say, like, yep, we're still Star Wars, but it's a whole new story arc.
Well, I would love the idea of maybe Skywalker being the knowledgeable head of a wider franchise that is less weighted in one family line. I think that, to me, when you say Kevin Feige is going to be taking over the executive producer roles moving forward, I think the whole idea of having everything have to tie into the lineage of Skywalkers was a problem when you're trying to pump a movie out every year or two. You know what I mean? They were trying to pump two movies out a year.
Yeah, May and like
and December.
December. Yeah.
So I mean, that's a lot when you're dealing with such a narrow storyline. So when you talk about the casino planet, and everybody was always dogging Last Jedi because the casino planet had the kids that were like picking up the broom with the force and stuff. Yeah, it's a little hokey, but at least it widens the base. I think the base needs to be wider. I think, you know, we need to spend more time with younglings other than slaughtering them like little, right. little Annie did back in the day when he was, you know, on his path to Darth Vadership.
Darth Vadership.
So I like the idea of them being there, but not always having to be in the forefront. And did you notice, like, to me, the battle between young Luke and young Leia, where they're training and they're doing that training battle in the forest, it really felt like that's like the possibility of another kind of prequel, sequel story, you know, Star Wars story in the line of the Star Wars lineage, you know? But that kind of destroys my whole premise because that's all Skywalker stuff, you know?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I don't know. We'll see what happens. But I mean, at some point, you need to keep, whether it's the Empire or you move on beyond the Empire, there still has to be stormtroopers and stuff. I mean, obviously, you could get into a new story arc and everything. But no matter what happens, whether it's pre-current, I don't know, saga? What would you call it? Current nine movies?
Yeah, that's like a phase. You know, if we want to talk about the Marvel Cinematic Universe's parlance, it's basically been three phases. There was the original trilogy, the prequel trilogy, and the third phase is the sequel trilogy. So now we're out of that. We're in uncharted waters and, you know, Godspeed.
So whatever comes out, I mean, let's say it comes out in the storyline takes place, you know, 500 years prior to what we've come to know, or 500 years after what we've come to know, and there is no lineage anymore of anybody. Mm-hmm. If there's not stormtroopers and lightsabers and the Force and phasers and Star Destroyers and speeders and droids and all this stuff, like, it doesn't have to be R2-D2 per se, but if you don't have any of that stuff, then it's not really Star Wars anymore.
Right, yeah.
So you're always going to have that feel of Star Wars. You're just going to have different characters that they're going to have to like sell you on and sell a new generation of viewer on. And it's good, you know, whatever that looks like, I don't know. And there's going to be like the writing is going to have to go down the path of like, we got to have a bigger gun,
right?
And we're going to use the Force to stop it.
Well, I think that's why I loved Rogue One, and we noticed it again in this viewing. Rogue One is just regular people. They're not Force, you know. And of course, the Force is in all of us. That's what they've drilled into us by the end here. But in Rogue One, nobody there was invoking. Nobody was talking about the Force other than our friend with the Force is with me. I'm one with the Force and the Force is with me. You know, like, he was a monk of Jeddah. So it made sense, but it was kind of a precursor to the Jedis, you know? So I think that is a better blueprint of what the cinematic universe has to offer. So I think they need to start thinking about it as a Star Wars cinematic universe, and they need to start thinking about how to expand it so the exhaustion of the audience doesn't get laid in too heavily. And I think Mandalorian is a great example of something that's in the genre, but far enough removed that we don't care necessarily where it takes place. I mean, we're always trying to figure out where it fits, and you're always going to have that in the lineage, you know, in trying to figure out where the movies fit, but it doesn't truly matter to the story that they're telling in The Mandalorian, you know? Like, to me, over the course of all these episodes of The Mandalorian, the one scene of the two scout droids, the two scout troopers, when they're holding the baby, the kid, as we're told to call him, not Baby Yoda, don't call him Baby Yoda, that makes Jon Favreau, that makes Jon Favreau angry when you call him Baby Yoda, because
Yoda.
He's not Baby Yoda. It's just the zeitgeist shorthand for what he is.
Well, does anybody know what the Yoda species is called?
It's not named. That's the problem. Name it already.
Exactly my point.
Come on.
Yeah.
Come on, canon people. Name the species of Yoda so we can move on.
That's right.
But when he's punching Baby Yoda in the little satchel, you know, and talking to the other trooper, it's just like it is the mundane part of the Star Wars universe that we're missing, you know?
Yeah. And I think to go with exactly what you're talking about, with Mandalorian being close enough, but a little bit off to the side in a sense. The other thing we've been watching too is Star Wars The Clone Wars.
Oh, good.
Yeah, so we're like neck deep. I don't even know where we're in the first season still. There's six seasons. We're in the first season, but I don't know where we are in there.
Are the boys watching it with you?
Yeah, so what we do is they always take forever to eat, you know, because they're clowning around and stuff. So we said, all right, as long as you guys get your food done, after dinner we get an episode of The Clone Wars. Man, I never saw kids eat so quick. They eat everything. They clear their plate. They bring it up to the counter. I'm just like, wow, that's all it takes is Clone Wars. It's the same thing as what we've always seen in Star Wars and the legends and the tales that they've talked about. But the Clone Wars kind of brings in, like, the happenings of the Clone Wars, in a sense.
Yes.
General Grievous and everybody's chasing each other around. Though I have to say, man, when they brought in Jar Jar Binks.
He almost tapped out.
Oh, my God. And so I said, Timmy, do you like Jar Jar Binks? Oh, yeah, I like him. He says some funny stuff. I was like, oh, God, help us. Yep, he appeals to the six-year-olds.
My Bryce always says, you know, he's probably a Sith because he's pretending to be as clumsy, but he actually, like, I don't know if you come across the episode of The Clone Wars, but he, like, assassinates, like, 10 people by happenstance.
Yeah, that's how he does everything. Like, whoops, I slipped. I just crushed our ship, you know? So that Broken, which is, like, it's like a docu-series on Netflix, like, makeup, look at how bad makeup is, and oh, you think you're recycling, but you're not really recycling, it just all goes in the landfill. You know, it's one of those kind of docu-series.
I saw that and I was like, oh, I don't want to be depressed about what I'm not doing, please.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely like, yeah, there's, in other words, like, okay, you win. I'll just throw it all in the trash. You know, like, there's nothing I could do here. And then the last one, which is surprising.
Okay.
Is The World According to Jeff Goldblum.
Oh, okay, good.
Specifically, episode 7.
Ooh, I've not ventured that far.
Which was about bicycles.
Oh, nice.
So one thing I will say, though, is that episode made us want to watch all the rest of them.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because we watched it. It was really informative. He touched on a bunch of stuff. And, you know, a lot of stuff I knew about, not everything, of course. And I was like, that was really cool. He has, like, a really disarming approach.
Oh, his persona is so larger than life that it just it disassembles everything that he talks about.
Exactly. Yeah. And I was like, this is so cool. Like, let's watch all of them now, you know? And I was looking at the headings. And all the stuff he covers, it's like, this is cool. Right. Like, he talks about a lot of, like, just nonsense. You know, sneakers.
Sneakers is great because, like, when he does the play-by-play of the guys that didn't want them filming as they were doing the deal for $3,000 worth of shoes. it was awesome.
What I love, though, is so he goes to the Specialized factory, right? You know, Specialized bicycles.
Oh, good. Oh, awesome.
And he's in, like, their R&D department that's, like, top secret. And so they have, like, their kind of, like, you know, stuff, air quotes, laid out to say, like, here's the parts of a bike and this is kind of how we work on it. But they got into some details, though, about some cool stuff, which I thought was really neat. Anyway, so as they walk past, you hear, like, this like part of a bike just goes clanging, like bing, ding, bing, you know? And then the guy turns, he goes, what was that? And then Goldblum's like, I didn't touch anything. And then he goes, let's see the replay. So they do the replay and you see him touch it, and he knocks it over. It was just like, but I love how like he calls himself out on it, you know. It was so hilarious. But that's what I said. He's like so disarming.
Yeah.
And like, oh, it's classic. It's classic. It's really like that one episode was so good. I want to watch all the rest of them.
Oh,
I
mean, good.
It was that. And I remember when we discussed it, I don't even know what episode, 88 or something. When we discussed it, I was like, who wants to watch this? This looks stupid. You know, this looks ridiculous. And I'll tell you though, I watched the bicycle one and he did a great job talking about like bikes and stuff. And he even talks about like, I don't even own a bike. I haven't had a bike since I was a kid. I don't ride a bike. Who rides bikes? And then, but at the end, he's like, you see him riding his new bike and he's all into it and stuff. And it was really cool. It makes you want to watch all the rest of it.
That's funny. So he didn't own a bike, but he got a specialized one, or did he get a different one?
No, he got one from Detroit Bicycles.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So he does talk about the Detroit. I keep saying like Detroit, slow roll. And the funny thing is he talks about Detroit a little bit too, about how like the city's gone to hell and stuff.
Right.
And I recently read the book Detroit, An American Autopsy.
Uh-oh.
And I'll tell you though, man, saddest book I think I've ever written in my life.
They should do a Broken episode on it.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it was broken isn't even a word, man. Just a wreck of a city, but we don't have to go down that rabbit hole.
But as if somebody from Chicago, you feel like a brethren to the city? Like,
no, because that city was so like car industry centric that like it was like mono industry.
Okay.
You know what I mean? So like Chicago and still does, has like, well, although the AC Delco plant, you know, probably doesn't exist anymore. AC Delco probably doesn't exist anymore. But they had like Ford plants and they had, you know, other auto things and stuff that were factories that have closed down and are dilapidated. But Chicago was much more like
diversified,
economically diverse.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was more economically diverse when you look at, you know, just like its industry,
yes,
its economy, mm-hmm, how, you know, like its business. Mm-hmm. Where once the auto industry left Detroit, like the whole city fell apart.
Yeah.
You know, and yeah, it's way more complicated than what we're going to cover here,
of course.
But so with that said, I would probably say, you know, I would say Chicago, I would feel more like in line with like a Philadelphia or something of that nature, you know, not really in New York. I mean, New York's its own thing, but maybe more of like a Philadelphia in a sense. You know what I mean?
Like a big city blue collar base.
Yeah. You know, with like the similar kind of L trains, mm-hmm, and, mm-hmm, you know, brick buildings and all that kind of stuff. But yeah, now Detroit's a whole other animal, you know?
Right.
But anyway, so what have you been watching?
So I've been watching a lot of, well, Mandalorian, the same as you, and obviously,
yep,
Rise of Skywalker, also saw that.
Yep.
But I've been watching a lot of Mr. Robot. So I watched Mr. Robot season 2. That's what I've been watching on the treadmill. I have an hour to kill, so I watch an episode and a half on the treadmill.
So they're like 45, no, they're about...
Yeah, yeah, 44 minutes, 45 minutes.
Okay,
yeah.
44 minutes. And
yeah,
sure,
something like that. And that second season, it's so funny. I watched the second season because I was like, I don't really remember I've seen some episodes of the second season, but I'll just start at the beginning and watch it through. And as I watched, I realized that the louder scenes, like the shootouts, were the parts that I remember seeing, because those are the parts that I woke up for when I was watching it the first time. Cause it's like, there's a shootout. Oh, I'm getting woken up by the shootout. So I was like, I've seen this episode before, but just this part of it where there's a shootout and then the rest trails off.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So now because I'm on the treadmill, I can't fall asleep. So it's perfect time to watch with the full attention of how to do it. And now that I'm going to start training for these, you know, whatever 10Ks and half marathons. I don't know how I'm going to do it because if I have to get out on the road, I can't be watching my TV while I'm running on the road. So
podcasts.
Okay. So, so I was watching Mr. Robot. I finished season two of Mr. Robot. I'm ready to get into season three. I'm very excited about it, into that. And then Lost in Space has season two. And I'm watching that kind of exclusively at home.
I saw that.
Yeah, I'm watching that on my new, you know, big screen in my bedroom. And it's kind of got this, I think I have to change some settings on my television in the bedroom because it has like a video quality to it that I need to soften. I need to change the lighting or the light that's coming out of the TV because it looks a little too photoreal. It needs a little darker film look to it. So I'm going to have to play with some settings there. But I'm into it. The second season, I'm liking it. I like the first season. I like what we're doing with Dr. Smith and what she's offering to the evil part of the franchise. What else am I watching? Oh wow,
Mr. Robot has Rami Malek.
Yeah.
Oh, cool. Yeah, some good acting in that, looks like.
Great acting throughout. I mean, I think what's her name? Carly Culkin. She is phenomenal. She's my favorite part of the whole show is her.
Yeah.
But especially the female part of the whole cast is just phenomenal. And BD Wong straddles the male female because he cross dresses through most of the show. So,
nice.
So he plays the crazy Chinese mogul. And
we'll have to check it out.
Yeah. And you talked about the way that, the second season of Jack Ryan does that thing of nation building and inter-country turmoil. This does it again through the banking industry, which is kind of phenomenal. You know, Mr. Robot, I wrote a review on Letterboxd for it. And because Letterboxd doesn't allow you to review TV shows, I actually took Fight Club as a movie and I wrote a review for Mr. Robot in Fight Club as a...
game in the system.
Right? And I said, since Letterboxd doesn't allow reviews for TV shows, I'm putting my Mr. Robot in here because I believe after I saw Fight Club, I wrote a sequel to Fight Club, which was called I Am Robert Paulson, which was the guy who died, Bob, who died. And I just decided everybody called himself Robert Paulson. So it's kind of the sequel to it. And Mr. Robot does a great job of taking the kernel of the idea that's inside a Fight Club and just expanding it into a whole universe. So I consider Mr. Robot fan fiction for Fight Club.
Oh, okay. Okay.
And the coolest thing was I wrote this review in Letterboxd on Fight Club. And as I hit submit to publish the review, a little dialogue box pops up like I made a mistake, you know? And it says, you're about to break the first and second rule of Fight Club. Are you sure you want to proceed?
No way.
And I took a screen grab of it because I'm like, this is the kind of tongue-in-cheek that app developers need to look at as, you know, like you have to know your clientele. And of course, this is something that's going to drive people crazy that have seen Fight Club that would love to see this because I'm not actually doing a review for Fight Club in this review. I'm actually reviewing Mr. Robot. But just to have this interplay with this app was just phenomenal. So
yeah, that is cool.
So I'm watching that and then High School Musical.
And you didn't break the rule because you didn't talk about Fight Club.
I talked about the sequel that I wrote to Fight Club. I wrote a little 10-page sequel to Fight Club. Little
there you go.
Little treatment for it, but that'll never get made. So I did not break the rule for Fight Club. And what else did I watch? I watched High School Musical, the series. I'm mostly caught up on that.
Oh, yeah. You were telling me about that before.
Yeah. So Audrey's still into that and we're super excited, but it has one more episode that she's seen that I haven't seen. So she's kind of, she's waiting for it. She's like, have you watched it yet? We want to talk about it. So it's kind of fun.
Yeah.
I think that's about it.
Cool. So it looks like we got some good viewing going on. A lot of cool stuff. A lot of the same things, similar things.
Yeah.
And yeah, I think the one, I mean, we definitely covered The Rise of Skywalker for sure and Jack Ryan and all these things, but I think the one that was the most surprising for me was The World According to Jeff Goldblum.
That's awesome.
I can't wait to see more.
Have you only seen one episode now?
Just the one episode, okay. But makes me want to see all the episodes.
Cool. I think Sneakers was strong. Sneakers and Tattoos were strong. There was the ice cream one kind of lost me a little bit.
Okay. Well, we'll probably just start from the beginning and work our way
there
through.
There you go. Oh, one other thing. I talked to some Marie Kondo people.
Okay.
And there are other Marie Kondo people.
How did you come to talk to them? Let's start there.
Okay. So at New Year's Eve, there was a family that was in marketing and they talked about some of their friends. So it's friends of friends of friends. So it's like three places removed. And
okay.
Her friend now works for the Marie Kondo, you know, corporation or whatever it was. And sure. And they were even scratching their heads about why they would chose the friend family as the first episode.
Oh, okay.
And internally they were saying that, right? Or amongst, you know, some individuals within the company. I wouldn't say in the corporate sense they were talking about it. But the big takeaway from the couple that I was talking to was because they were so divisive, the friend family, maybe they drove people to hate watch with more fervor.
Yeah.
Than if they started off with that, like, more palatable families, you know what I mean? So,
or the widow. Or,
right, exactly.
You know, yeah.
So I thought that was an interesting callback, and I was like, I wish I knew what episode, because I would just call it out for you, but, you know, listen to my 99 episodes, and we'll be talking about it somewhere there.
That's so funny, man. That's so funny. So, yeah, you told me you talked about it then.
Yeah,
splendid.
Awesome.
Okay, so before we get out of here,
yes,
let's give a throwback to your three-word review.
Oh, God, okay. okay, so for Tenet. Tenet. No, I think you said it. Did you say it? Did you say the second N?
Tenet. No, Tenet.
Tenet.
Yeah.
Matrix Unloaded Reloaded.
Matrix Unloaded Reloaded.
There you go. That's a three-word review.
Man.
That's because...
Now I know why we cut out the three-word reviews. Oh, man, it's so funny.
Okay.
Okay, no, I got it. It had some
Matrix qualities to it. That,
oh, it totally
that car
does.
Chase scene on the freeway where things are happening
totally
backwards.
Does. I thought that's so hard. Yeah, like, boom, this is Matrix.
And
yeah,
we didn't,
no,
and,
you're so right.
And we didn't mention the Matrix when we were reviewing that trailer at all. So there you go.
That's true. Yeah. Okay. Dude, I love it. Bring back the three-word review.
No, never. too much work.
Episode 200, maybe we will.
There you go, 200.
Yeah.
Look forward to that one.
All right. Well, while we're looking forward, let's wrap this sucker
right
up. And, man, episode 100, I want to congratulate you for making it this far. And
you too, my friend.
Yeah. No, it's been a wild ride, and it's been fun. Love having beer with you every week.
Always.
And the beer this week finished super strong. My breath bouncing off the mic... What do you call this thing? The mic sock here, whatever?
Spit guard or the
yeah,
de-esser?
It makes me the pop filter.
Pop filter, yeah.
Oh my God, I feel like I've been like drinking a fifth of Jack or something. I mean, it's like the rye whiskey barrels. It's totally like, oh man, it's just all over it. But
awesome.
But yeah, and then you had a couple of good beers and everything tonight, so you... The father-in-law got you some good beer, I take it.
He did. The Imperial IPA is phenomenal, and I will probably have another glass before I go to sleep tonight.
While watching the 49-inch.
Exactly.
That's what she said. Okay, let's get out
all
of
right,
here with
all
that.
Right.
That's ugly.
Have a good night.
All right, man.
See you.
Yeah, you too. Have a good night. See you next week.
All right, bye.
Next week, join Jim and Ted as they disarm another Hollywood bomb or marketing masterpiece. Remember, the Holy Trinity of podcasting. Subscribe, like, share.
Special thanks to Jeremy Kent Jackson for the voiceover and Rahelio for the music.